Please the court, my name is William Roush. I appear today on behalf of the petitioner, Patrick Acker, and also on behalf of Mr. Acker. My associate, Molly Hall, is appearing. She's sitting at council table, both of us from the law firm of Davis and Kielfeld. This is a direct appeal of an administrative order that was issued by EPA. We brought the action seeking judicial review directly because the way EPA issued the order without penalty, we had no other recourse, no right to a hearing, and no way to defend the charges. We brought the appeal pursuant to 42 U.S.C. 7607B1, which is a separate grant of jurisdiction to this court to undertake review, judicial review, of any final action of the administrator. I think one of the reasons we're here this morning is because of the truly unique nature of this case. And I think you can tell it is a unique case because EPA has not found a case on point which clearly justifies what they have done here. Mr. Acker and Pewaukee School District spent well over 2 years in very contentious litigation with the state of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources involving identical facts, identical allegations, and identical claims. If you put the complaint and the administrative order side by side, about all you have to do is change the citations to Wisconsin statutes and regulations to the EPA citations to its federal regulations to see how identical the two matters are. After 2 years of very costly litigation, however, the state was compelled to evaluate its position, and notwithstanding a long-standing policy of the Wisconsin Attorney General's office to never, ever stipulate to the dismissal of a complaint once it was filed, in evaluating this case, after 2 years of litigation, the evidence that was developed, the documents that were produced and exchanged, and most importantly, the sworn testimony of the witnesses who knew of the facts, demonstrated to the state that any further pursuit of the action at that point was more likely than not frivolous and would potentially subject them to sanctions. Since the district was interested in staunching the bleeding and stopping the expense, we agreed to stipulate to the entry of an order for judgment by stipulation dismissing all of the state's claims and, in fact, all of the claims that had been brought in the case on the merits and with prejudice.
A little unclear. Do you agree that if the state had not been involved here at all, that there would be no jurisdiction to review the EPA's order?
No, I don't think I do agree with that, because this case is drastically different than the Asbestec case that EPA primarily relies on. And aside from the underlying litigation in state court, you have a situation involving a private individual. In Asbestec, they were claiming that they had been deprived of their property without due process of law. Here, Mr. Acker has been deprived of his liberty interest because he, in what appears for all intents and purposes to be a final declaration by one of the largest and most powerful agencies of government in the United States.
Well, what if the EPA sends a letter to someone in the Pewaukee School District and says, we think you're violating the Clean Water Act, don't do it anymore?
I would say, no, it's not.
Why is that different than what happened?
Because that is an initial action. For instance, in some of the cases where people have sought to appeal from a finding of violation is merely the first step in a stepped enforcement process that is engaged in by EPA. And after you have a finding of violation, you have an opportunity to confer with the agency to try and change their mind and avoid the issuance of a final order. In this case, you don't have those kinds of informal actions by the agency. You have an action that is, by all intents and purposes, final, containing formal findings of fact, formal conclusions of law, and finding Mr. Acker guilty of violating laws and regulations designed to protect human health.
Aren't you equally stigmatized by a letter from the EPA saying that you're violating the...
I don't believe so. I don't believe so, and I don't think the cases hold that. In some respects, it's similar to the situation, I think it was Paul V. Davis, that was in front of the Supreme Court, where there was merely a memo that was circulated regarding an individual who had claimed to be an FBI agent when he wasn't. And they found that there had been no immediate consequences for him. I think this situation, even without the underlying state litigation, is different because of the magnitude of the action that EPA took. But what really distinguishes this case is the state litigation, the fact that we litigated these same claims for 2 years.
That's why I asked you how important, if you'd be here if it wasn't for the state litigation. And you said you would be here.
Probably.
Even if there wasn't
well,
a state
the reason we would be here is that the Pewaukee School District, by statute, owes Mr. Acker a defense. And they have to provide that defense to him. And arguably, even if there had not been the underlying state litigation, if the final order, as opposed to a preliminary letter, was issued to Mr. Acker, arguably the school district would be in breach of its statutory obligation to provide him with a defense. So, yes, we probably would be here. The case wouldn't be nearly as strong, but we probably still would be here. But the real difference in this case is the underlying state litigation on exactly the identical facts, allegations, and claims that are being made by EPA in this final order. And in that respect, Mr. Acker has not only been deprived of his liberty interests in his good name, he has been deprived of his property interest in the final judgment he secured in the state of Wisconsin Circuit Court involving the identical claims. EPA was not ignorant of what was going on in this case. The state of Wisconsin kept them constantly informed. The state of Wisconsin provided them copies of the pleadings that were being filed. And according to the terms of the Memorandum of Understanding between EPA and the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources regarding enforcement of the Clean Air Act and regarding enforcement of the NESHAP standards, which is National Environmental Standards for Hazardous Air Pollution. Supposedly, Wisconsin and EPA are meeting or discussing all of their enforcement activities on a monthly basis or more frequently. We can't prove what was said or done in those meetings because obviously we're not privy to the government's documents regarding ongoing enforcement action. But EPA knew all along exactly what was going on. And what they did is they waited and waited and waited and waited until the state action had gone to final judgment. And then they decided to reissue the identical claims under ostensibly their independent authority. That deprives Mr. Acker of his property interest. And we've cited two cases for that proposition. One is an old case, McCulloch versus Virginia, and the other one is Haddox versus Johnson. both of which find that once rights have vested under a judgment, that you have a property interest in that judgment, of which you cannot be deprived without due process of law. And in this case, again, I think it's important to recognize that the claims were dismissed on the merits with prejudice. And true, although it was done by stipulation, basically because the underlying claims were frivolous. And one of the most damning witnesses...
Well, is that a conclusion that you feel someone can draw, or is that somewhere to be found in the body of the order?
It's not in the record, but I can tell you that this is the only instance that I'm aware of, and the only instance that the AG's office is aware of where they stipulated to the dismissal of their complaint on the merits with prejudice. As I was going to say, one of the most damning witnesses with respect to the identical claims that were pending in state court was the EPA's own expert witness, who was hired out of the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services, Mr. David Schmidt. There are portions of his testimony that are quoted in our brief. There are portions of his testimony that also appear in the appendix. As I started saying earlier, not one of the cases relied on by EPA meets the standard, and we've gone through that fully in our reply brief distinguishing those cases. I'm not going to do it again.
Well, you'll be eating into your rebuttal if you do.
Yep, I see that. Thank you, Judge.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Roush. Mr. Greenberg.
Good morning, Your Honors. Alan Greenberg with the United States Department of Justice, representing the United States Environmental Protection Agency. In 1997, employees of the Pewaukee School District removed floor tile mastic.
I want to break you up, but we've already read the entire briefs from both sides. Reciting the facts won't do you any good.
What I wish to emphasize, Your Honor, is that the removal of the tile and mastic did not comply with the federal regulations governing removal. That removal activity required a response, and EPA issued an administrative order to Mr. Acker. It was a measured response. It simply informed Mr. Acker of the existing standards, that he had violated those standards, and reminded him of his responsibility to comply with those standards in the future. Mr. Acker has challenged that order, but that order is not final agency action that this court may review. The order has two substantive components. It has a finding that Mr. Acker violated the NESHAP, and it also has an order that he comply with that regulation in the future. With respect to the liability finding, no legal consequences follow from an agency's determination that a person violated the law. We cited in our brief the recent D.C. Circuit case of AT&T versus EEOC, which reaffirmed this principle that an agency determination that a person has violated the law does not have legal consequences unless the agency can persuade a court of the correctness of that agency's interpretation. The order simply issuing a finding of violation is no different than a letter issuing a finding of violation, a statement issuing a finding of violation.
So the agency would have to go to court in order to enforce any penal provisions against him.
That is correct, or any injunctive relief provisions in that order. There is no self-executing properties of this administrative order.
So the only thing the EPA has said so far is if you do it again, we're going to bang you on it.
Correct, and if you do it again, in order to bang you on it, we have to go into court and prove to a district court judge not only that you did it again, but that you did it the first time. There's no prior determination that EPA findings in this case have been established. The second component of the order is the substantive provision that directs him to comply with the asbestos removal regulations. And again, there's no legal consequences to that component of the order because the order doesn't change Mr. Acker's obligations. Before the order issued, Mr. Acker had to comply with the asbestos NESHAP. After issuance of the order, Mr. Acker has to comply with the asbestos NESHAP. This is not an order that has any new legal consequences. It did not assess a penalty, and as we note in our brief, if it had, there would be provisions for judicial review of the order. The fact that the order simply requires him to comply with the law does not give rise to new legal consequences or impose any new rights or obligations upon Mr. Acker.
Mr. Greenberg, could a letter such as you described occurred in this case impact federal funding to a state or a school district if such a letter were in existence?
I'm not aware of any effect on federal funding to school districts that would be a consequence of such a letter.
If the funding were in any way halted because of a reg that you, let's say Department of Education reg that said if you have received such a letter or you're in violation of any EPA mandate, funding would be impacted. If such a thing occurred, would that put this in a different posture?
Probably not, because the order was issued to Mr. Acker here on an individual basis. If the order had been issued to the Pewaukee School District, and as a consequence of the issuance of the order, the Pewaukee School District would automatically be deprived of funding without an opportunity for a subsequent hearing, then under that set of factual circumstances, perhaps there would be a legal consequence. I'm not aware of any consequences, and particularly not aware of any consequences in which there wouldn't be a subsequent hearing before, for example, the Department of Education, before any funding was cut off, there would be an opportunity most likely for a hearing to allow presentation of evidence. Before such of a
well, but you direct Mr. Acker in his official role here, right? And that is Mr. Acker, private citizen, state of Wisconsin.
The order is issued to Mr. Acker as an individual as a result of activities that he took as a employee of the school district.
By the way, Acker was not a party to that state court action. That was against the school district.
Acker was originally a party to the state court action. The claims against him were dismissed on procedural grounds for failure to serve him properly. He was not a party to the judgment that he is now seeking to use as a shield in this case. In conclusion on the finality issue, we believe asbestos is directly on point and should be found persuasive. I would also note that this court's decision in Hoffman Homes under the analogous context of the Clean Water Act similarly held that Congress did not intend for these administrative compliance orders to be reviewed in the Court of Appeals. Instead, they must await an enforcement action. Turning to the issue of the effect of the state court judgment in this case, we start with the basic premise: the United States and states of this nation are not in privity. They are separate sovereigns. And as a general rule, the United States is not bound by judgments either in favor of or against states. There are certain exceptions to that rule, but none of those apply here. If the United States bore the laboring oar in the state or prior litigation, then the United States can be bound. But there is no evidence that the United States bore any laboring oar in the Wisconsin state court case. As we note in our brief, EPA was pursuing a separate investigation, separate discovery, separate activities regarding, and parallel activities, and ultimately inconsistent activities with what the state was doing. Given that there's no laboring oar, what other exception could possibly bind the United States to the state court judgment? Mr. Acker relies on the structure of the Clean Air Act. The structure of the Clean Air Act does give states primary significant role in administering the Clean Air Act. But in giving states that significant role, Congress expressly said that, quote, nothing in this section giving them the role shall prohibit EPA from enforcing any applicable emission standard or requirement. So if you're looking at the structure of the Clean Air Act, yes, the states have a role, but that role does not at all impact the United States' ability, independent sovereign ability, to enforce the provisions of the Clean Air Act. I'll also note, as we did in our brief, that Congress expressly provided for, or at least contemplated, that separate and subsequent enforcement actions could be brought for the same violation by providing that penalties assessed in an enforcement action must take account of prior penalties assessed for the same violation. There would be no reason to have that provision in the statute if there wasn't contemplated the possibility that two separate enforcement actions might be brought for the same violation. Regarding the regulatory threshold and whether that was met, the 160 square feet that must be met before a activity is regulated under the Clean Air Act NESHAP. Tile and mastic are separate products. They can contain asbestos or they can't contain asbestos. And for that reason, EPA treats them separately, and if they both contain asbestos, and if they're both removed without complying with the asbestos NESHAP, then the square footage of each are added together. And the example that Mr. Acker provides in his reply brief highlights the correctness of EPA's approach. In his reply brief, Mr. Acker argues that the tile wasn't regulated asbestos-containing material because it wasn't a friable or crumbled product. And EPA agrees that floor tile is not necessarily a regulated asbestos-containing material. There are ways to remove floor tile that don't result in it crumbling or breaking. You can use heat. You can use dry ice. You can use infrared rays. There are a number of methods that are familiar to the industry. If Mr. Acker and the school district had identified the asbestos in the floor tile, used an appropriate method such as dry ice to remove it without impacting the integrity, then we probably wouldn't have an order here because there wouldn't have been a regulated asbestos-containing material with the removal of a floor tile. There would have just been the mastic. But in this case, Mr. Acker did not use a removal method that maintained the integrity of the tile. They used an ice pick device that resulted in the breaking of the tile. And this method, these kinds of mechanical methods, are the kinds of methods that result in a high probability of the asbestos-containing material becoming crumbled by the force that's expected to act on the material. So you have an asbestos-containing floor tile that was mechanically pried up and therefore removed in violation of the asbestos regs. Then you have the mastic that is sanded, and that results in the dust and crumbling of the mastic. You add the two of them together, and you reach the threshold. There is nothing unreasonable about EPA's interpretation of its regs, and that interpretation is entitled to deference in this case.
Mr. Greenberg, is it common, if you know, for EPA to, when parallel actions are occurring, to let the state go forward and then await results? Or is this not a run-of-the-mind situation?
I think, in general, EPA does not pursue simultaneously an enforcement action if a state is also pursuing an enforcement action. If you look at the fact patterns of many of the cases that are cited in the party's briefs, often the EPA enforcement action comes following the state enforcement action because there are either additional violations or other reasons for EPA to take a step. In this case, EPA, recognizing the significant dangers of asbestos and particularly the importance of asbestos removal in the school context, felt that the order that it issued was a necessary and appropriate response to remind Mr. Acker that these are the requirements that apply in the removal of floor tile, and to remind him that in the future he should comply with those requirements. If the court has no further questions, I believe my time is about to expire. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greenberg. Mr. Roush?
First of all, I'd like to say we disagree with the contention that the asbestos case has any applicability to this case. I think the case that is more applicable is this court's decision in the Fleury case, where the court noted that in the event a licensed physician were publicly chastised or what have you, without a recourse, that it could very well impair or give him a right of recourse for some kind of review. Acker was a party to the action when it started. He was granted summary judgment, but the summary judgment was not reduced to final judgment. It was essentially an incomplete adjudication.
Well, it was just a notice thing, wasn't it?
It was just a notice thing.
They didn't serve them properly.
Well, there's the Wisconsin statute that requires before anyone sue a municipal or school employee, they provide a notice of claim to allow them an opportunity to try and resolve the matter short of litigation. And that's been held to be applicable. To DNR actions, and the court did grant Mr. Acker summary judgment. The same allegations with respect to Mr. Acker were identical to those that were made against the school district. The fact that Mr. Acker was awarded summary judgment didn't change the fact that the same allegations, the same factual matters, the same claims were fully and finally litigated and brought to final judgment of dismissal on the merits with prejudice.
Is Mr. Acker currently the director?
He is currently the director of Buildings and Grounds.
His professional standing hasn't been impacted by the CPA action in any way?
Mr. Acker did receive a serious, serious punishment as a result of this matter.
From who?
From the district. He was subjected to discipline.
As a result of the pending EPA?
No, as a result of the actions that were taken.
By the state?
No, by him and his custodial crew. I do want to note, EPA cites absolutely no prior authority, guidance documents, memos, or anything else for this creative double counting that they've now come up with. I think it violates common sense to suggest that 160 square feet of a floor actually are 320 square feet of a floor. And I would point out that the red tiles in this case, which were the only tiles, I see my time is up.
You may complete the thought.
Okay. Were not crumbled or ground up. They were popped off with what's essentially an ice scraper. It's like a hoe with a long handle on it, and that's what they used. They popped them right up, and that's how they came off.
All right. Thanks, Rob. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the second case of the day.